views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show. I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and my mission is to help you create a life you love at work, at home, and at play. We're a couple of months into a reading of my book, Break Free of Parenting Pressures. Today, we're starting part three. So if you're just tuning in and you're someone who prefers to do things in the right order, then you might want to head back to the beginning of June 2019 and start listening to the podcast from there. Part three is all about your parenting pack. So while the first part was about understanding your beliefs and how your beliefs affect how you parent, that sort of thing, and the second part got more into relationships, so things like power struggle, self-control, personality, and such, and all of those things actually influence all of your relationships, whether you're a parent or not. This part, part three, is more about the tools, techniques, and strategies that will be most relevant to you if you're a mom or a dad, a teacher, a coach, a group leader, a babysitter, a grandparent, that sort of thing. So if that sounds intriguing to you, I hope that you will enjoy the show. And if it doesn't feel applicable in your life, I really hope that you'll return in the fall when I'll likely switch back to my regular format of interviews and other timely material. So without further ado, break free of parenting pressures. Embrace your natural guidance. Part three, a free parenting pack. Chapter eight, packing with care. My calling plan. When my kids were young, I was operating a parent education business out of my home. Phone calls were a touchy issue since people were often calling for parenting assistance. Having my children act up while I was on the phone would be embarrassing, to say the least. I decided I had to come up with a plan before any big problems could arise. I wrote down a list outlining what I needed from my kids when I was on the phone. I kept it short and created simple rules to follow, complete with rewards and consequences. I explained my strategy to my kids in little pieces because they were like 2 and 4 years old at the time. And we practiced it with phone calls to friends and family. We developed a secret code for when the phone call was really important and both kids understood that nothing short of an emergency should interrupt those calls. Now, my children were taught that anything mommy was doing could always be interrupted for an emergency. Thankfully, we never had any. Real big emergencies anyway, but they knew that they could interrupt then. When possible, I'd plan my phone calls to happen during our afternoon quiet time when the kids were typically napping, drawing, looking at books, or coloring. When the phone would ring or before I'd dial, I'd announce what I was doing and start the call. If they got too loud, typically by playing, or tried talking to me during the call, I'd give the prearranged signal that I shouldn't be interrupted. If they ignored the signal, I would ask to ring the caller back and hang up. My kids then went to their bedrooms where they would stay until I had phoned the person back and finished my call. There was no discussion or negotiating once I hung up. The damage had been done and the consequences were calmly enforced. If they quieted down after the signal, or never required the signal at all, I would finish my phone call and we'd celebrate our success. Our rewards were things like playing outside, eating a popsicle, watching a favorite show, or playing a game of their choice. when the phone calls weren't prearranged. It was a bit tougher, but it still worked. If we were in the middle of some high-energy game when the phone rang, I either let the machine get it, or I would ask if I could return the call. If I needed to take the call, I'd signal to the kids and make it up to them afterward. On other occasions, my kids would be playing nicely when I answered the phone, but a few minutes into the conversation would start acting up. When this happened, I'd give them the signal, or if necessary, ask my caller to wait while I let them know I was on the phone. If my kids cooperated, I'd finish my call. If they didn't, the rest of the plan went into place. This didn't work all the time, and my kids definitely tested the plan. I found that because I had a plan and had been clear about it with my kids, it was easier to stay calm and put consequences in place when things went awry. Although I thought I might be embarrassed to have to interrupt my phone call to deal with my kids, the callers seemed to understand and were often thrilled with my process. I also became aware of the amount of time I was spending on the phone and made a conscious effort to decrease my daytime calls. Overall, my kids became pretty respectful when I was on the phone, and I experienced very few annoying or embarrassing phone situations as a result. Some other phone tips that I've heard over the years, and some of them I've seen people use to varying degrees of success, include the following. Have a basket of toys that come out only during phone calls. Have a grab bag with little dollar store items the kids can grab from. Have a special snack bag with treats the kids get to eat only when their caregiver is on the phone. Take a moment during a lengthy call to stop and praise the kids for good behavior, saying something like, "I really like the way the two of you are playing so nicely while I'm on the phone. Keep up the great work." Create a chart that the kids put a sticker on every time they successfully allow you to have an uninterrupted phone call, which eventually results in a reward. Our hidden baggage. When it comes to parenting, we carry a lot of baggage with us. This pack of information is made up of techniques and strategies that were used on us in our youth, whether they worked or not, whether we liked them or not. In other words, if a teacher made us stand in the corner with gum stuck on the end of our nose, the idea of humiliation will be something we carry. If we really didn't like how this strategy felt, we might believe that we would never use it and not even know that we're carrying it at all. Interestingly, though, it is there and sometimes will resurface in ways we never imagined. For example, you might warn your child not to choose grape drink to bring in the car because if it spills again, it will make a mess of his clothes. It spills, and now there is a purple stain down the front of his yellow shirt and beige pants. Frustrated that he didn't listen to your wisdom, you make a big deal out of how awful it looks, telling him he should be embarrassed of his stained clothes. You then take him along to all the stops that you had initially planned, making jokes with other adults about his purple shirt. Sound a bit like humiliation? The important piece to understand is that this idea, right or wrong, is in your parenting pack. The teacher might or might not have done it to be mean. You might or might not use it to be mean. The fact remains that in both cases, humiliation was used to try to force a child to think about what he has done, recognize his error, and behave better the next time. It is something you know and therefore bring along with you. This explains why we will catch ourselves doing things that we swore we would never do, or how we can open our mouth and hear our mother's words come tumbling out. These actions can create a feeling of guilt and sense of failure if we aren't aware that they are with us. Those strategies that were used on us often or that were accompanied by intense emotion will always be around. When we need a parenting tool, we reach into our pack and pull one out. When we are stressed, angry, or otherwise bothered, We tend to reach for tactics that have an element of hurt or punishment to them, not because we're bad people, but because we're looking for a strategy that fits how we feel. When this happens and the child doesn't seem to care about the consequences, we will reach for something harsher. The challenge becomes learning new ideas and practicing with them so we can replace some undesirable punishments with ideas that fit our parenting philosophy. Like any new plan, the tendency will be to go back to the familiar. If we resist that urge and make ourselves use our new skills, over time, we will become more comfortable with new strategies and less likely to use the ineffective old one. So if you find yourself standing over your child, waving your finger and telling her that she is very, very bad, know that your mother or teacher or coach has not just teleported in and taken over your body. Instead, you have grabbed a tactic from your parenting pack that someone else has given to you. You still need to take responsibility for your actions, but at least this can help you understand your response and perhaps be a bit more forgiving. Free parenting tip. Our parenting pack is made up of strategies and tactics used by other people to get our attention when we were younger. We carry this pack wherever we go, so it's a good idea to know what's inside. Unloading the heavy stuff. Most of us have strategies in our parenting pack that we would prefer not to use. While we might respect the way our parents and other adults raised us, lots of older tools do not fit with what we see as acceptable today or do not meet our parenting goals. Punishments like spanking, the strap, arm grabbing, twisting, threatening, excessive privilege removal, or consequences like scrubbing the toilet with a toothbrush are all tools we recognize might not be the best way to teach right from wrong. These strategies gain compliance by creating fear in the child, fear of pain, loss, embarrassment, or of the person threatening the act. Most of us can understand that compliance through fear is not effective, as it tends to damage self-esteem, sends conflicting messages, like, for example, I'm hurting you because I love you and I don't want you to get hurt. Talk about conflict. And has the potential to escalate into something dangerous. For many of us, these techniques don't work because we're not raising our children to fear us. As a result, when we pull out a fear-based tool, our children have nothing to link the underlying threat to. It's like the family dog growling at us when she's never bitten before. We might be surprised by her growl, but chances are we won't take her threat seriously. Another problem with these tactics is that they are often pulled out when we are angry, stressed, embarrassed, or at our wit's end. Our child ignores us, our self-control snaps, and next thing we know, we've bitten our child. The guilt, embarrassment, and regret are often too much to take. These tools are usually in our pack because other people use them on us. We do not have to use them, but unless we are aware of them and why they are not effective, we are very likely to pull them out. If we allow this to happen, we will desensitize to this parenting style and begin to justify their use. Over time, we will start to see fear-based tools as the only strategy that really gets our child's attention. These strategies can appear to be effective because they often result in the child stopping what she was doing and changing her behavior to do as we asked. But this is only part of the equation. The real test of whether or not the tool worked would be for the child to have learned what she did wrong, why it's not okay, and what she might do the next time this situation arises. Instead, she's likely learning one or more of the following lessons. 1, people who are bigger can hurt people who are smaller, which is bullying, I gotta say. 2, when you do something wrong, be sure to not get caught. That encourages sneakiness. 3, making mistakes is wrong and you should fear it. Sounds a bit like perfectionism will come from that. 4, my parent is mean and I hate him or her. That results in resentment and revenge. And 5, people who love you will hurt you. That leads to a sense of helplessness and even abuse justification. Parents using these strategies are not usually mean people. They are simply doing the best they can with what they know. There are 2 arguments I hear from parents to justify the use of these tools. The first is that as long as these tools are not used in anger, they are a good way to get their child's attention. Even without arguing about the effectiveness of the tool itself, there is still something else to consider. When we are not angry, we are more apt to use our creativity to try to figure out another way of gaining our child's compliance. Parents who are most likely to pull out these fear tools are already at their wits' end. They're stressed or they're otherwise feeling pushed. Rarely will a parent today use these outdated methods when they're feeling calm and in control. In other words, most parents use these strategies only when they are angry. The second argument I hear is, my parents used it on me and I turned out okay. Well, our world has changed from when we were growing up. We are constantly learning and evolving. Yes, we want our kids to respect us, but fear us? Once we know and understand why these strategies are ineffective, how can we, in good conscience, continue to use them? Replacing our heavy tools. Recognizing that these techniques are not helping us be the kind of parent we would like to be, the question becomes, what can we do about it? The first step has already been accomplished. Awareness is the key to making changes to what's in our parenting pack. In fact, just becoming aware of how we talk to our children, like the tone of voice we use, the words we use, the body language, can make a huge difference in our relationship with our child. The second step is a bit more intensive because of the volume of work that is required. Fear-based tools are very powerful. There are plenty of other effective strategies, but none that on its own easily replaces a fear-based one. For example, timeout is a tool most people are familiar with as an alternative to spanking. Timeout, when used properly, can be a useful way to help kids learn self-control. It does not, however, satisfy the strong emotions that are often surging through us just before we spank. The only way a timeout can help in a situation like that is when the parent is the one who takes it. This means fear-based strategies can only become a thing of the past if we replace them with a variety of other tools. Ideas like timeout, choices, logical consequences, privilege removal, or problem solving can be used effectively depending on the situation. There are no tools that are going to work perfectly in every situation or with every child, and often prevention will be a much better way to deal with things. It is up to us to fill our parenting pack with a variety of strategies that allow us to choose the best tool for the job and then do our best to control our response enough to make the best choice. Free parenting tip: becoming aware of the outdated gear we are carrying in our parenting pack can help us lighten our load. If we look carefully at what we are trying to achieve when we correct our kids and learn tools that deliver that message, we will get better results and build a stronger relationship with our child. Knowing how to pack. One of the most challenging aspects of parenting is feeling confident that we are doing the right thing when our kids make a mistake. If there is something I've learned about raising kids, it's that there is no right or wrong way for doing things. The kindest of words can be turned into a cruel manipulation tactic with a simple tone of voice, and tools that on the surface appear totally hurtful can be done, albeit rarely, in a way that provides effective learning. A little side note here. While I'm not an advocate of hitting children, some parents talk about the respectful way they were spanked and the learning that they took from it. Others share stories of fathers engaging in a fist fight with their teenage boy that taught far more than it hurt. These methods seem counterproductive to me, yet I'm open-minded enough to recognize that in these cases, they might have been carried out respectfully. This means we shouldn't immediately write off the strategies we like to use in support of those currently being promoted as best. There have definitely been instances where best practices have turned out to be far less than best and have caused more grief than benefits. People who adopt these tools despite concerns about effectiveness eventually drop them and then feel resistant to trying new tools in the future. I believe we should give serious thought to our overall goals with our children and decide whether or not our current strategies are working toward that end. If they are, then we can continue using them. If they aren't, small adaptations might be needed, or on occasion, new ideas might be in order. Adopting new things just because someone else tells us we must damages self-confidence and makes us second guess our usual ability. Kids learn better and pay more attention to what we ask if we are predictable and consistent with our messages and follow through. They also pay more attention if we choose our battles carefully, resist nagging, avoid overcorrecting, and are careful not to overuse the word no. Making good use of the natural tools we have, like our voices and our relationship with our children, will also work to our advantage. This means instead of calling a request to our child from a different room, we might walk over to him, put our hand lightly on his shoulder, and talk to him. This eliminates the question of whether or not he heard us and lets him know that we mean business. The Triple P Positive Parenting Program from Australia suggests that we give him time, about 10 seconds, to process our request and do as we asked. After a silent count to 10, if he doesn't move, we can calmly repeat our request. If he chooses not to listen after a second pause, consequences can be put in place. Any request that requires our children to shift gears, as in stop what they're doing and start something else, will work better if we give them a few minutes warning ahead of time. Although our schedule might be clear to us, it's not apparent to others, especially our children. When we let our kids know in advance to prepare for a change, they are much more likely to comply. A 10-minute warning before bed or a 5-minute warning before leaving a party will always be helpful. If my kids politely questioned the time provided, I'd ask them how much time they needed and then negotiate from there. Often, I would suggest 10 minutes and they would make a counteroffer of 7. Another idea to keep our kids working with us is to prepare for outings in advance. This means rather than throwing a few items in our bag and heading out to the store, bank, or doctor's office, we take the time to think about what the challenges might be for us and our kids. We decide ahead of time what we can do to prevent challenges, like having a toy for a bored child or a snack for hunger, and develop consequences or rewards for good behavior. We let our kids know in simple, age-appropriate terms what will be expected of them and how we will celebrate when everything works out, like a stop at the park for a swing or 2 extra stories at bedtime, those kind of rewards. Establishing a warning signal for problem behavior is also a great idea, so our kids can have an opportunity to use their self-control and change what they are doing. The warning should only be used as planned, for example, said once and calmly, and then the consequences come into play. If things go bad during our outing, it's easier to stay calm and use consequences that we've already prepared. If things go well, our simple celebration reinforces our success. This doesn't mean we can never do anything spontaneously. It just means that the more we prepare in advance, the greater the chances that our experience will be positive. There are some things that will make all of our parenting strategies more effective, such as the following. Number one, having clear expectations, clarity of what behavior is acceptable versus unacceptable, with an understanding that people won't always measure up to them. Two, an understanding that mistakes are an opportunity to learn, not a sign of weakness. Discipline should allow a child to take responsibility for her behavior without making her feel faulty as a person. Three, recognition that life is gray, while most tools are black and white. Be willing to adapt tools to fit the situation and the people involved. Four, communication that builds relationships and models respect. And five, calm, controlled, and consistent follow-through. Clarity, creativity, respect, and planning are necessary parts to whatever strategies we decide to include in our parenting pack. Preventing problems by thinking them through in advance and ensuring our message is clear and unmistakable can reap us many great rewards. Free parenting tip: the difference between a good or bad parenting tool is often how we are using it. Having a variety of tools in our parenting pack, planning things out in advance, and being clear with our requests makes it easier for us to use our tools well. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and let us know what you loved. Visit vibrantpowerfulmoms.com to find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant Powerful Moms.